Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Did you know that when you roll over your 401k, after-tax contributions can only be rolled into an IRA or a retirement plan that keeps track of the taxable and non-taxable parts? Talk to the 401k rollover experts at KPP Financial. They'll help you make the best possible choices for you. Just click on Contact Steve or Justin and type 401k rollover on investtalk.com. End of commercial. Now today's Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Invest Talk. It is October 18th, 2016. What we're all about is above average investing for the average investor. And today, topping our talking points is a discussion about calculations you need to do to get the right mix of cash, bonds, and stocks. It's asset allocation for the bucket investor. So bring your questions, and I want to hear about your investing experiences too. You know, as you get closer to retirement, you have to decide how much of what investment you want, whether it's just cash, or it could be all stocks, all bonds, or a combination, commodities. It really doesn't matter what you decide you need to do, but you have to decide. You just don't let it happen. And the decision-making means you have to ask yourself some questions. And so we're here to answer questions, any financial questions you want to talk about. From time to time, we get questions about options. The world of options can be pretty complicated, but if you grasp the basic concept, it can be a great tool for you, the average investor. I'm not talking about speculating on major price swings. That's really difficult, and there's a lot of dangers involved with that. But what I am suggesting is that you take the other side of the speculator's trade and maybe sell them options. Being an options writer, selling options can be a great income strategy with less risk than owning the stock outright. I'll give you an example. Let's say you have stock XYZ and it's a $100 stock. Now, one basic strategy is to write an out-of-the-money put option. I know you don't know what that means, out-of-the-money put option, but let me explain. And you can write an out-of-the-money put option at a strike price of $95, okay? And that option, almost all options expire the third Friday of every month. So that option, that out-of-the-money put option at $95, expiring a month, will be done in 1 month. Okay, remember, it's a $100 stock. So let's say you do write that option, and each option contract is 100 shares, by the way. Let's say you do write it, and they pay you $2.50 per option. Remember, someone's going to have a put option, meaning they get to put the stock to you at $95, okay, within 30 days, okay, or the third Friday of the month. So they're going to pay you $2.50 for that right to put that stock to you. Remember, it's out of the money. It's already $100 right now. So it's got to go below 95 before they can put it to you. So that means you get $250 for that, because every option is 100 shares, $2.50 a share. So you get $250 in your pocket. So now say that the stock does fall to $90. And they put the stock to you. Well, this is what happens. So basically, you bought that stock that you liked at $100 for $92.50. That was $95 that they put it to you. That was a price they could put it to you. But you got $2.50 per share for that right. So it only cost you $92.50. You may still be stuck with a loss if the stock went down to 90. But that's a loss of 2.7% at $92 a share, $92.50, instead of 10%, because you were going to think about buying it at $100. Now, if that stock does not fall, let's say it just stays above $95, you get to put the $250 in your pocket, expires that third Friday of the month, the option does, and then you can write another one. Do it again. See, so that's a strategy to make money. Now, that assumes that you want the stock and that, you know, 100 shares is not going to be too much for your portfolio. Did you really like the stock? You just want to buy it or try to get it as cheap as possible. See? It's what option strategy. In a choppy market like we have right now, this could be a pretty good way to garner income. In a bullish market, this will underperform. This will underperform. Okay, you got to remember that. Now, the biggest pitfall is keeping strong risk controls of your overexposure. You don't want to be put too many stocks. So you got to understand what if all your options, you wrote a bunch of them, what if all of them got put to you? What would that do to your portfolio? Would you be way over-invested? Would you be too much in one stock? All that's got to be considered. Anyway, if you have a question on that, love to talk to you. There's drawbacks and benefits of all option trading, but you really have to understand how it works. Okay, this is the Q&A portion of the program. We're open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 888-99-CHART. Asset allocation for the bucket investor, that's going to be our main talking point today. Also, I want to talk about some manufacturing numbers, industrial production, and the New York Fed's manufacturing report survey. I want to talk about those. I think those are interesting. We need the good kind of inflation. We need it. What am I talking about? We need the good kind of inflation. And have you noticed the market has been failing in midday rallies? Sometimes, like this morning, the market started off pretty strong, then faded, and faded again. Why does that happen? That needs to change because it's not bullish. So those are three things I want to talk about with some detail if we can get to them. But, of course, the show is yours. We talk about what's on your mind first, not what's on my mind. What happened to the market today? Well, I think you saw that the market started up nicely, okay? And I think that the Dow was up well over 100 points, well over 100 points. But it ended up being up 75. The NASDAQ was up, 20, 25, and I think it was about 20. It ended up being up 13. NASDAQ was up 59, 60-something points. It ended up being 44. Still a good day for the market. It was up. But I want to know why it keeps fading. The rally keeps fading during the day. What is with that? It seems to fade almost every day. When a bullish market means that the market would rally toward the end of the day. I haven't seen that. Anyways, that's what happened today. Was there any big news out there? I don't think so. There really wasn't. Anyways, why don't you give me a call? This is Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART is our number. 888-992-4278. And this is a voicemail that came in earlier.
Hi, Steve. This is Doris. I left a message about bonds. I was looking forward to hearing about it. Could you also tell us about bond funds? We'll listen to you on the next broadcast. Thank you.
I think she said that she wants me to talk about bonds. Okay. Let's talk about bonds versus bond funds. Maybe that was what she was trying to ask about. A bond, is an individual instrument that pays you a certain yield, let's say 3-year, 3%, 5%, over a set period of time, the length of the bond, 1 year to 3 years to 5 years to 7 years. And so what they do is they offer the bonds at par, okay, paying you, let's just pick some numbers, paying you 4% for 4 years, okay? So every year it's going to pay you 4%. And it's offered at par, meaning that term means a bond is maybe offered at $10,000. Usually it's even lots, $10,000 for a bond at par. And it will mature at par. Now, I need to have you understand that process. During those 4 years, the bond value could go up and down. If you wanted to sell it before it matured, you not necessarily get what you paid for. You may not get par. You may get more than par. You may get less than par. But excuse me, what drives that price up and down is what the current interest rate environment is. But also can be driven up and down by the value of the underlying asset, the company. Let's say the company's going bankrupt, then of course the value goes way down, right? But generally it's interest rates. And the reason why that's important, because when you go, remember, it matures at par. You buy it at par and it matures at par. When you buy a bond fund or a bond ETF, they buy bunches of bonds, and the net asset value of all those bonds is what you buy the bond fund at, whatever that number is. Now, as these bonds mature inside a fund, they just keep reinvesting them, right? So the net asset value goes up and down based on interest rates. If interest rates go up or interest rates go down, the value of the bond will follow. But when you buy the individual bond, you know it will go back to par. That's the difference. A bond fund doesn't go to par, never goes to par. They're always reinvested. The bonds inside go to par, but the value of the bond fund, that's why I like to buy the bonds themselves. I think buying bonds themselves is the way to go in this environment, especially in an environment where you think the interest rates might start to rise. It's much more important, if you think that's going to happen, to buy the bond. Bond funds, you still can do it. I don't want to say you can't do it. You can buy a rising interest rate. You can buy a floating bond rate fund. You could buy a short-term maturity bond fund. There's things you could do. But overall, I think it's smarter to buy the individual bonds. And that makes it problematic for individuals. It's difficult. I'm glad you're with us today. What is really driving the markets and economies today? That's on our new InvestTalk View video commentary. Justin Klein will go over the yield spike, earnings season, and the importance of observing long-term cycles, such as a long-term credit cycle. Now, if you like, take a look. It's right there on homepage of investtalk.com. If you have a question for me, my direct line is 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Jake calling out of York, Pennsylvania. I was wondering what you would evaluate Skechers at, symbol SKX. It's got a PE ratio around 12.5, which I think is very low considering the last 5 years. I know it reported weak earnings last quarter, but it has some other good numbers that I see, including its price-to-sales ratio and the return on equity. So I'm just wondering if you think this is a good buy point. I look forward to hearing your answer on the podcast.
It is range of the good buy point. It is. This is Skechers, everybody. Skechers, SKX, markets men, women's, and children's casual dress and athletic footwear via department and specialty stores. And they have very low debt. It's a really solid company, 21% on return. And sales did go down last quarter. In other words, sales were only up 10% when the sales have been up in the mid-20s or higher quarters, all the quarters before that. So that was why it kind of dropped dramatically there in July. And it's been kind of flumping around at this low, in the low 20s. 22.67 is what it is today. My value is in mid-30s, about $34, $35, somewhere in that range is what the value, because that would mean just a normal PE range for a nicely growing stock. So I think that's pretty doable, about $35 a share. And it's $22.67 now. So that's where the number should be. It's going to make $2.03 next year. And as a $22 stock, you can see that's only 12 PE? So that's pretty low. The five-year range is 11 to 90. So, you know, it's right there at the low end. So I kind of like it. And if it breaks down below the low it made in September, you can exit the stock and limit your losses if it does do that. I'm Steve Peasley, and no matter what your money question is, I'm here for you. Here's 100% certainty for 2017. There will be change, maybe radical change. We hope you can join us for our Saturday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, November 12th, San Jose Wealth Conference. It's entitled How to Prosper in a Year of Change, 2017. Go to investtalk.com, sign up. Okay, so let's talk about how to set up an asset allocation for retirement, because most people are working toward that goal, but once you get into retirement or you're close to retirement, what should you own? What should you have? Should you be totally in cash? What is it that would benefit you the best and make sure you stay comfortable in retirement, both and how much risk you take and your lifestyle. And there are off-the-shelf allocation guidelines, okay, that tell you, okay, if you're at this age, you do this, and this age, you do that. And there are those things. But to be honest, those are very general, and they really don't really address your personal risk tolerances and your income level. Remember, only you know how much you're going to need to spend in retirement. Now, you sit down with somebody like me, and they can help you determine that. You know, if you don't know, we can help you do that. But you have to kind of get a hold of what you are going to spend, how much money you have coming in, how much money you're going to have going out. And that coming in part is with Social Security and any other retirement account you may have, and how much money you have to take out of your savings or your investments on a monthly, quarterly basis. How much do you need to live into retirement comfortably? And really, that is very individualistic. Some people can live on very, very little. Some people can't. At least they don't think they can. So no matter what that number is, you have to determine what you're going to spend. And then whatever that spending is has to be sustainable over any length of time. Has to be. So you got to know how much assets, cash, investments, bonds, whatever it is that you have. Then you have to decide, okay, well, how do I achieve that? And with the achieving that, how much money I need to be sustainable, how do I do that with how much risk I want to take and not be up at night worrying about my money? And remember, you still need emergency funds. This still happens. So these are the things you need to really take into consideration. And, of course, your personal needs is primary. What is it for you? What is it? Do you know? Do you know how much money you're going to need? And when do you have to start this process? So that's a really fear. Most people in this day and age don't retire because they want to. They retire because they have to, for whatever reason. It's a problem. So you really got to be prepared for it. That's really important.
If there's a question you want to ask Steve or Justin directly, there's a way podcast subscribers can be part of the program. InvestTalk is produced each week at 4 p.m. Pacific Time. If you call 888-99-CHART between 4 and 5, you can connect and ask your question, even do a follow-up. It'll be good to hear from you on InvestTalk.
Let's talk to Sam in Pleasanton. How you doing, Sam?
I'm doing good, Steve.
Thank you for the call.
I have a question about Skechers UFA, ticker symbol FKX. I recently bought a couple of them at $21. I just wanted to know, what are your views about the stock, and what do you think? Should I continue holding on to them, or should I let go of them?
I think you hold on to them. We just talked about Skechers about 15 minutes ago. I said the value is about $35. I said that this is a good spot to buy it. And if it drops below the low it made in September, if it drops below that, that's your get out point. Just get out. But it's pretty inexpensive. It's still growing. Yeah, it had an earnings problem last quarter where the earnings were less than they have. But the sales are still growing 10%. They have been growing, 20-25%. But they're still growing, and we're moving into the time of the year where, usually growth picks up for them. And it's cheap. Stock is selling for, 12 PE. That's very low. I'd hold on to it, Sam. I would.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Thanks for the call. SKX, everybody. Let's go to James in New York. How you doing, James?
I'm doing well. How are you doing tonight?
Good. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. I wanted to know, I'll be shifting a certain amount of my portfolio towards gold and in gold mining position. I just wanted to know, I'm 30 years old, what would be the safest maximum amount to devote towards gold at the present time? And I was also wondering, do you think the Los Angeles Dodgers have what it takes to beat the Chicago Cubs?
No. I might be on the West Coast, but I'm rooting for the Cubs. I must admit, I want the Cubs.
So am I, for that matter. Yeah.
I don't like the Dodgers. You know why I don't like the Dodgers? Because I have
National League team.
Yeah, that's right. I'm an Angels fan. I have season tickets to the Angels. I've had them for 30 years.
Sure. Good team, the Angels. I like the Angels.
Yeah. Anyways, let's talk about your gold position. No more than like 15-17% of your overall portfolio, and have it spread over like, don't have more than like 3% of any one gold mining company, so you'll have a good spread of it. And in actuality, sure. James, that's what we own. We've owned that all year, about that much.
Okay, so if I do a maximum of 20%, I should, you said 15 to 17, but if I'm in 15 to 20, that's okay?
That's okay for this market environment we're in today, yes.
What I wanted to know, you said no more than 3 to 5 in each individual stock, but
yes.
In the case of GDX, because that's an ETF, could I put a little bit more than 3 to 5% in something like that?
Yes, since it is an ETF, which is, follows an index of the gold miners, I would say yes. And I would also suggest the miners versus gold itself. Now, gold itself, you trade it by using the ETF GLD. And then if you compare GLD to GDX over this from this year to year-to-date performance, you'll see why I'm suggesting the miners. The gold, the miners are much more leveraged to the price of gold. The price of gold goes up, the miners go up faster. So that's why I would suggest the miners. That versus the actual gold as an investment.
Yes, that was my thinking as well.
Okay. Thank you for the call, James. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Gold, GDX is the gold miners index. And then we don't own GDX, but we do own in our managed accounts, our stock managed accounts, a number of gold miners stocks. Let's go to Phil in Petaluma. How you doing, Phil?
Good, and hello to you, Steve. I'd like to get your insights on Teva. I know it's up today, but in the last quarter, it's come down quite a bit, and maybe I'm missing some news or something, but it just is a surprise to me.
Teva is the generic drug maker in Israel, if I remember right.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so it's an Israel developer of genetic specialty, over-the-counter drugs, and active pharmaceutical ingredients. A very big company at $40 billion is not a peanut small company.
Right.
They're going to make $5.20 this year. That's down about 4% from last year. But it's going to rebound next year to $5.88. That's about 13%. Pays a 2.7% dividend. So you buy this stock really for the dividend. You're not going to get a lot of growth out of it. You're just not. The growth is pretty much flat. This last quarter was up 1%, the June quarter. Before that, it had been down 2 to 5% a quarter. So you're not going to get a lot of growth. So now the question is it fallen enough? It's fallen from $64 at the beginning of the year down to $43 now,
$43.26. Right. Yeah.
That's a pretty big fall. That's a 33% or so.
Right.
So... okay, so now the P.E. ratio, what is the range? Well, it ranges usually 7 to 13, so it has a very low range for the P.E. ratio in the last 5 years or so. But right now, that is at 7, 8. It's at that very low part of the range. So, in answer to your question, Bill, this is where you want to try to pick it up. This is what. Now, I wouldn't necessarily jump in it today, even though I had a nice day today. I'd like to see it. At least trade sideways a little ways to make sure it has stopped falling. You know,
okay.
And if you want to take a risk right now, then only buy half your position and buy the other half when it stops falling or starts to rise again. You know,
sure.
You could do it that way if you're pretty confident. But it is pretty cheap, paying a 2.7% dividend, and it's a good solid company.
Felt, and then the chart doesn't show any other. That it might go any further down?
Well, there's no support yet, so that's why I'm a little nervous about buying it here. I don't see any in a one-year chart where it's, this is where it stops. Even in a two-year chart, this is the lowest it's been in more than 2 years. But it is way oversold, and it's been way overpunished for no reason. Okay? Bill, appreciate the call. Thank you. Let's go to Ray and Durarte. How you doing, Ray?
Hello, Steve. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Love your show.
Thank you.
I have want your opinion on symbol play, P-L-A-Y.
Oh, that's Dave and Buster's. Yeah, Dave and Buster's. You want to buy it?
Yes, I want your opinion on that and entry point.
Okay, let's take a look. Operates 81 restaurants in 30 states, Dave and Buster's. Let's see. They're going to make $1.52 this year. They already have next year and the year after earnings estimates in. They're going to make $1.94 next year, and then $2.24 the year after. That's 2018. I'm not sure how they can look that far out, but that's what they're saying. They have pretty solid growth between 12 and 15% sales every quarter growth. The PE is fairly low. It's a $40 stock going to make $2.24, so that tells you the PE is below 20. And the five-year range is 17 to 38. So it's pretty low. Great return on equity at 21%. Management owns 6%. Mutual funds are buyers, pretty strong buyers of this, Dave & Buster's. And it looks like it's put in a bottom. So, you know, it right now has moved back up to the 200-day moving average at $40.51. But it looks like the bottom was put in right around $38, $37.50, $38. And it looks like that was a lot of support right there, and it's bounced. So, yeah, I think this is a good spot to buy it if you want to buy it. I do. If the market goes down, it'll go down, but it shouldn't go down on its own. It looks like the numbers look pretty good. Okay, James?
Good.
I'm sorry, Ray. Appreciate it, Ray. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. That's Play, P-L-A-Y, Dave and Buster's. Now, you know, I'm just looking at the numbers quickly here when you're calling in. And I can give you a pretty quick analysis, but it's by no means in-depth. And it's disregarding what the market will do. The market could pull these stocks down or push them up. You know how the market is. Sometimes it gets overexcited and pushes things up for no reason. Sometimes it gets over-depressed. Yeah. So you got all those things you got to deal with. But from the fun, I'm just giving you the fundamental analysis and what the chart looks like in a very quick snapshot. Just want you to know that. Let's go to James in Petaluma. How you doing, James?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm the same age you are, so
okay.
You know where we're dealing here.
Yeah. So what? We're 35, are we?
By my financial guy to do an annuity, and I know you're not a big fan of annuities.
I'm not.
So my question is, hypothetically, what would you suggest as a replacement for an annuity? I keep bringing up, you can just buy $250,000 worth of AT&T and Verizon and sit and live with that. But he wants a non-correlating asset, but I like my AT&T idea better because it's not like it's going to go out of business.
No, AT&T, Verizon, yeah. And both those pay very nice dividends. I mean, you know, that's why you would buy them, you know. AT&T pays 4.9% and VZ, just to see, pays 4.6. Annuity. Why would you buy an annuity? There are reasons. I don't want everybody to think that I'm just death on annuities. I'm not death on them. I just don't like them. There are situations where annuity looks pretty good. And there are some annuities that look better than others. Now, let's talk about the basics of annuity. Annuity is an insurance product. It's a product offered by an insurance company. It's a contract between you and the insurance company. That contract is pretty complex, and when you're sold an annuity, they only touch the highlights, and they usually only touch the highlights that are positive, usually not the highlights that are negative, because they're selling it to you. I don't like them because usually they're very expensive. I don't like them because they sell a lot of them, James, to people you're my age. And sometimes, and even in our retirement account, when an annuity is tax deferred already, so why would you buy it using the money from a retirement account? They're sold to us, but they're not very liquid. In other words, there's usually holding periods from 7 to 10 years. You can't sell it till those periods are up. Now, I don't want to tell you all the negatives, Remember, it's also backed by insurance companies. So whatever the strength of the insurance company is, the strength of the annuity and the contract. If the insurance company has trouble, bankruptcy or whatever, there's no FDIC or SIPC or anything like that. They do have a guarantee fund, but that's a whole other issue if they go bankrupt. But the positives are there are annuities now that are sold that say, well, you'll never lose a dime. Okay? They'll never lose a dime. Well, that is true if you hold it for 10 years. It's very rare that the stock market goes down, has not gone up in any 10-year period. It's very rare. It has once, twice. So that's why they can say you will never lose a dime as long as you leave it alone, because they're pretty confident about that. I would be too. Most of the time I don't like annuities because the salesman doesn't tell you all the facts, and it's pretty expensive, and the salesman makes a pretty high commission. That's why I don't really care for them. Why not buy, if you're looking for income, and that's what some of the annuities are designed to pay, why don't you do just as you suggested, James? Buy a group of high dividend paying stocks. Just hold on to them. You'll be fine. You'll be 10 years from now, the length of the annuity, or 7 years, I guarantee you the value will go up and you'll be collecting your interest, your dividends all those years. Pretty cool.
Well, that's been my response every time. Just go get some Verizon, AT&T, and that'll probably pay more of the annuity. Even if it goes up or down, I'm still going to get the annuity. I'm still going to get the dividend, and the dividend's more than I would get from an annuity.
Yeah, and you won't have any hidden capital gains burdens. Many of those annuities have capital gains that are built in there, and you don't know about it until you want to buy out of it or when it ends. And you say, well, I made this much. I said, no, you didn't. You had to pay taxes on that still. It's tax deferred,
and
not tax-free.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah,
the fact is, in my tax bracket, I'd be a 15% tax bracket anyway.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So there's not a lot of reasons to buy an annuity. There isn't. James, appreciate the call. That's great.
Thank you.
Let's go to Jason in San Jose. He wants to talk about IBM. Talk about IBM.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, what is the good entry point to buy this stock?
Okay, let's talk about IBM. And I kind of like IBM. They're getting, IBM is pretty, over the years, and it's been around a lot many years, IBM has been pretty flexible about always being on the cutting edge. And whatever the changes are, you remember IBM, when I was young, they had the big computers. I mean, that was their big iron, big blue. That was it, just computers. They'd sell computers, million-dollar computers at a time. Didn't want to get into PCs at all. Then they moved from the big iron to service sector, servicing the software and servicing the computers they sold you, which was a great thing to do because big iron computers are getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. Now they've been moving into cloud computing because, service sector is still important, but cloud computing is becoming bigger and bigger and bigger part of the computer age. So I like them because they seem to know when to move to where you need to go instead of sticking with their old business model. If they were still focusing on selling big computers, they'd be a fraction of the size they are today. They're a $144 billion company. Sales have been falling pretty steadily, and just their most recent quarter, they went flat. Now, they've been falling, but not a lot. Earnings are going to go from $14.92 last year to $13.51 this year to $14.09 next year. So that means the PE is like 12, okay? So right now, it's not that cheap. It sounds cheap, but now when you look at IBM and you see that its five-year average is 8 to 15 PE range. And based on next year's earnings, it's going to be 12. So it's not cheap compared to itself. It's fairly cheap compared to the market, but not compared to itself over the years. They have a great return on equity of 112. They have a really good dividend, 3.7%. And that's really why you buy this, Jason. You buy it for the dividend. Is that why you're looking at it? Oh, okay, I'm sorry. He's left. But you do buy IBM for the dividend, paying 3.7%. So you'd like to buy it cheap, and it's not cheap enough yet. I even though it was down decently today, 2.4% today, on an up day, probably bad earnings numbers or something. I didn't see it. But I'd wait. I would like to see you pick it up in the $120 area, $125, that in that range, and I'd be patient with it, and I think you might get it. It's hard to know, but I'd read, why did it go down today? If that reason it went down, and the outlook was, read a couple reports after close that some of the tech stocks outlook looked poor for the next quarter. So in that case, you want to be patient. I like IBM, though. I think they have always been able to stay, on the cutting edge of things in the computer world, even though they're huge, and it's hard to do that. But they do. They're good. 888-99-CHART. Each month I schedule one-hour meetings with our listeners, individual sessions where we can go over your accounts and get to know you and your goals for retirement. If you're not near our California offices, I can meet with you via Skype or the telephone. It's easy. Did that several times today. If you'd like to set up a time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then portfolio review. Love to talk to you.
In a world starved for yield, many investors have become myopic in a chase for higher yields. They ignore risk and other fundamental factors, which puts their portfolio at risk, at high risk. Today, InvestTalk insiders received a special watch list of equity income opportunities. Join this free program, be an InvestTalk insider. Sign up now on investtalk.com.
Well, did you see the industrial production numbers or the New York Fed survey showing manufacturing? Did you see those reports that come out today? Now, they're not key reports, but they're important reports. I think we need to talk about them. They weren't good. It wasn't disastrous, but they weren't good. That kind of worries me a little bit. You're listening to Invest Talk.
Let's get back to Invest Talk on this Tuesday. Steve is here to take questions and share ideas, and he'd love to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now.
888-992-4278. Okay, industrial production. Let's talk about that first. Industrial production posted a paltry rebound in September. This is a September report. Paltry, okay. The headline industrial production fell a tenth shy of consensus expectations in September, 0.1%. 0.1%. Now, for the full quarter, industrial output was up 1.8% versus minus 8% for the previous quarter. So the quarter rebounded nicely, but this most recent month, not so good. However, if you look year over year, from last year to this year, we're 1% less than a year ago. Now, you add that to the New York Fed survey about manufacturing, and this is the first report that comes out for October. This is the first report we've seen for industrial manufacturing for October. And this showed a sharp decline of 6.8 points versus 2-point decline in September. So it got worse month over month. Now, they did say that there were some optimism for next year. Now, I wish I had some optimism, but I don't. At this point, I don't know. They don't say where they got it. I add this information in my mind to other information that came out today, and I don't know if you noticed, but Forbes was cutting output. Ford said they have too many vehicles, and it was in their truck division, their highest growing truck division, that they're cutting back production. Now, does GM have the same problem? Does Chrysler have the same? You add this industrial production number to a huge sector of auto sales, which has been very big this year and last year, right? And it's only recently, a recent month or two, that we see them starting to cut back, and that kind of dovetails into these reports, that kind of dovetails into a softer economy. But, I look at all the numbers, and so should you. All the numbers say that the economy is soft, but it's still growing. Just not very much. That has to change. Some has to happen. We can't keep doing this. I mean, obviously we can, but it's just not producing enough anything for us. We need capital expenditures by corporations to happen. We need demand to pick up by consumers and companies everywhere. We need some inflation, which we're not getting. You know, there's things we need. Let's talk to Gary in Belmont. We need Gary as well. How you doing, Gary?
Good. So my question is, AmeriGas, ATU, pays about an 8% dividend. When I look at their earnings, I don't see how they can continue to offer this. But their stock continues to either maintain or go up.
Okay.
What do you think?
Well, I think they can put up with, they can do it. I don't think they likely would, because sales are falling. And the reason why, Gary, is the cash flow is $4.88 a share. And if it's 8% dividend on a $47 stock, that's what, $3.50? And earnings are only $2 to $2.75. So they can't pay that 8% out of dividends, I mean out of earnings. They have to pay it out of cash flow. So they have the cash flow. They could support it for a while if they decided to do that. But I don't.
Well, I looked at the last 2 or 3 years, and it's the same scenario. And so how long do you think they can do that without their stock really going down?
Now, see, that's an excellent question. That is a really excellent question, because one other piece of the pie here is they have lots of debt. How can you pay, or why should you, okay, let's say you're the stockholder here. You own this company. Why would you pay 8% dividend and yet be borrowing huge amounts of money? You know you got to pay back that money someday, right? You got to pay it back. And sales are falling. Sales are falling, not going up.
I know. So would this be a possibility for a short here?
Yes. Now, having said that, you got to be tight on your short. So if they, for instance, if it breaks above $49, you get out of your short. It's at $47. He thinks the stock is going to go down. So you just got to put a stop out of your short, Gary, so it doesn't run up on you. You know, just in case you're wrong.
Okay.
You know, just in case we're wrong.
Okay.
Thanks, Gary. Appreciate the call.
I am.
Our time is up for this hour. I have a new day for Individual Retirement Views in San Ramon. It's November 1st. Reserve your hour with me. Just go to investtalk.com. Click on the Invest Talk tab and then give me a call. Set it up. I'm Financial Advisor Steve Peasley, President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, I want to thank you for listening today. And let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.